Hello, and welcome to the Clinical Care Options Infectious Disease Podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Adams. This episode is taken from a webinar on cutting-edge concepts in HIV care, featuring Dr. Paul Sachs. Dr. Sachs is the clinical director of the HIV Program and Division of Infectious Diseases at the Brigham and Women's Hospital and a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School in Boston. In this episode, he will discuss cutting-edge recommendations and options for HIV PrEP. For the full online educational program, please visit the link in the show notes for this episode. Now let's get started and hear what Dr. Sachs has to say about what's new in HIV PrEP.
All right, moving on to pre-exposure prophylaxis. Well, I know what the people at the CDC were doing during their holiday season because they updated the PrEP guidelines in December. I think this was released like December 27th, in that week between Christmas and New Year's. And I think it's important for us as care providers, especially if we do any outpatient primary care, to think about this for sexually active patients and to at least to take a full sexual history so that we can get it to the candidates who need it the most. There are a couple of different options available. We talk about the oral options, which are FTC-TAF, which is the newer version of tenofovir. It's only really been tested in men and transgender women. And then there's also an off-label use of the older form of tenofovir, which is basically event-driven, meaning like in our case here, this patient, he says his sexual contact's only once a month. You know, maybe he could just take the medication around the time of that sexual exposure and it would work for that. This kind of intermittent therapy has not yet been studied for the other form of tenofovir. And you'll notice the laboratory monitoring, and let me emphasize this right here. It's now recommended in the guidelines that patients being followed on PrEP have an HIV assessment every 3 months. And the HIV assessments they recommend are the antigen antibody test, which is the screening test, and an HIV viral load. This is very controversial because, as you're probably aware, HIV viral loads are more expensive than standard HIV screening tests. And is it necessary? Well, I'll show you the rationale behind it momentarily. Yearly lipid monitoring, and then the people who are taking TDF, that's the old version of tenofovir, and I'll tell you what stands for, tenofovir disoproxil fumarate, but you'll forget that almost instantly. But people taking TDF need to have their renal function followed pretty closely because TDF has nephrotoxicity as one of its signature side effects. So here are the data that support using on-demand pre-exposure prophylaxis with TDF-FTC in men who have sex with men at a high risk for HIV. And the on-demand strategy is shown in the sort of golden box or rectangle here. A person would take two of these TDF-FTC tablets 2 to 24 hours before sex, one 24 hours after the first drug take, and one 48 hours after the first drug take. So it's 2-1-1, two before, one the same 24 hours later, and one 24 hours after that. And that's actually been very popular for people like this who actually don't have high-risk exposures on a regular basis. So this seems to work, and now it's listed as a sort of alternative in the guidelines, whereas previously it wasn't mentioned at all because it wasn't FDA approved. Okay, there it is. This is a 54-year-old cisgender man, and he's been taking the new version of tenofovir FTC for PrEP, and he has sex with multiple male partners one weekend each month, doesn't use condoms, and there are your results from his visit 3 months ago. So he says, I want to switch my one pill a day TAF-FTC to injectable long-acting cabotegravir. So what the guidelines say, and this is actually very prescient of them, they knew that this was going to be approved. And so they talked about discussing PrEP with all patients, and then also that this was actually a cabotegravir was now an option for adults and adolescents weighing at least 35 kilograms And then the laboratory testing part in this new guidelines was surprised a lot of us. This was controversial to add the HIV viral load, and especially for people on IM cabotegravir. And where did they get this recommendation to do the viral load? And I'm going to say it has to do with, oh, and they also want people checked every time they come in for their injection. So their decision to do this comes from the HPTN 083 and 084 studies. There were two of them. 083 included men who have sex with men and trans women. 084 just included sexually active cisgendered women. 083 was done globally. 084 was done predominantly in sub-Saharan Africa. And what you can see from the table, and they're randomized to get either long-acting cabotegravir or TDF-FTC, plus matching placebos. That means the people in these studies, if they got randomized to receive the oral PrEP, they also received placebo injections. So it was truly blinded. And you can see that both HPTN 083 and 084, that the number of new infections that occurred in the cabotegravir arm was significantly lower than in the TDF-FTC arms. These are very impressive data, strongly supporting the idea that cabotegravir is more effective than TDF-FTC for PrEP. And people might ask, how is that? And the reason is that people are less likely to take their oral PrEP after a certain amount of time. And low medication adherence was the dominant explanation. So there were people in these studies who acquired HIV. And the way that the investigators have been kind of categorizing them is they show them in several groups. Group A are people who actually had HIV at the start, and they somehow got in the study. Usually that's because the screening visit and the entry visit, they actually had HIV acquired in that period. Group B are people who've had infection after they skip doses of cabotegravir. Group C are the people who are getting HIV during the oral lead-in, so presumably they may not have enough drug on board yet. And group D are the people who, even though they're very adherent to coming in for the injections, they still end up getting HIV. And one of the key things about this is that they ended up getting HIV, and then the tests were delayed in turning positive. So it was only going back retrospectively and doing viral loads on those cases that they were able to say that when they acquired it. So recent data updated shows that after the unblinding of the 083 study, the results still favor cabotegravir. The long-acting injectable PrEP is significantly more effective than oral PrEP. I just want to say that some have taken this to mean that it should be the PrEP of choice for everyone. Others have said it means that it should be the PrEP of choice for anyone who might have difficulty taking oral PrEP. I can see both sides to this argument. In general, what we're doing is if people can take oral PrEP and they're good at it, then they stay on that because it's very effective. But if there are interruptions or discontinuations, or if they just simply can't imagine taking a pill every day, but they're at high risk for HIV, then injectable is the way to go. And the superiority data means that there's actually a lot, at least here in Boston, there's a lot of support for giving this to people who need it, meaning financial support. They're able to get it covered. So this is just looking at some of the infections that occurred in the 084 study. The 084 study is basically the same, it's the same as the study in MSM. And as I mentioned, this one is in cisgendered women. There were actually fewer infections in this study, and there were no infections that occurred in people who were getting adequate doses. So you can see some of these they hadn't had. This was at baseline. The first A1 is at baseline. B1 is during the lead-in. And then this over here, this last one, DX, is someone who had a kind of prolonged period where they didn't get any injections at all. And we just saw some data at the 2022 AIDS meeting showing that people continue to benefit from long-acting cabotegravir for PrEP. It's very, very effective. And You know, it is significantly more effective than oral PrEP. It just, it's a little bit more cumbersome to give it, which is, anyway, that's something that the clinics can address. So this gets to that issue that I described before of delayed test turning positive. Cabotegravir, as I mentioned, if you give a dose of cabotegravir, it's in the body for months. So not surprisingly, someone who acquires HIV while receiving cabotegravir can have a long time before you can actually detect it because there's partial viral suppression. So the cabotegravir delay was 62 days, and that's a long time. That's 2 months. And then for people who acquired HIV during the study, it was nearly 3 months. Actually, it was over 3 months. Delays were also occurred in people taking oral PrEP, but not nearly as long. So we worry about this because if you don't detect that people have HIV and they're receiving cabotegravir, they could get what's known as integrase inhibitor resistance. And integrase inhibitor resistance is bad because it means your treatment options subsequently are greatly reduced. So overall, I think this is a very promising strategy for PrEP, obviously significantly better than oral PrEP in clinical trials. Still, it's not for everyone. So moving on to the problems with cabotegravir, at least theoretically, is that if you stop it and look at the figure and the exposure to the drug. So let me walk through this chart. If you look at the likelihood of adherence, and the horizontal axis is low on the left and high on the right. If adherence is high, you're in this zone of no infection, no resistance. If you're really poorly adherent, way on the left, there's no drug, no resistance, no infection. And then the concerning place is in the middle, this pink rectangle. And here, you don't have enough drug on board to be completely protected from getting HIV, but you have enough drug on board to select for resistance if, in fact, someone gets infected. And so that is the group we worry the most about in general. Pretty much everyone who's getting primary care and is sexually active, we at least should have an exploration with them about whether they're potentially at risk of HIV. And yes, most of the PrEP use in this country is in men who have sex with men, but other people with frequent sexually transmitted infections definitely should have a discussion with them, especially even if they're cis women. That's totally, totally acceptable. We know that injectable cabotegravir was superior to TDF-FTC in PrEP in both men and women. It's not perfect. Neither is oral PrEP. Some people still get HIV even though they're on PrEP. We do now recommend HIV viral load testing in addition to antigen antibody testing for all patients on PrEP. So that's a new recommendation. And then there is also a way of giving this oral PrEP on demand. And the CDC guidelines now actually have it for MSM. It's not yet FDA approved.
Thank you very much to Dr. Sachs, and thank you to our listeners for joining in. As a reminder, to view the full Contemporary HIV Treatment and Prevention 2022 program on the Clinical Care Options website, and to access the slide set for cutting-edge concepts in HIV care, click on the links in the show notes for this episode. Please be sure to check back regularly for more episodes on important infectious disease topics. Thank you, and have a great day.